The evidence is also overwhelming that the great global catastrophes were either accompanied or caused by shifting of the terrestrial axis or by a disturbance in the diurnal and annual motions of the Earth. The shifting of the axis could not have been brought about by internal causes, as the proponents of the Ice Age theory in the 19th century assumed it was. It must have occurred, and repeatedly, under the impact of external forces. The state of lavas with reversed magnetization, hundreds of times more intensive than the inverted terrestrial magnetic field could impart, reveals the nature of the forces that were in action. Thus, from the geological evidence, we came to the conclusion to which we had also arrived traveling the road of the historical and literary traditions of the peoples of the world, that the Earth repeatedly went through cataclysmic events on a global scale, that the cause of these events was an extraterrestrial agent, and that some of these cosmic catastrophes took place only a few thousand years ago. In historical times, many world-wide phenomena, for each of which the cause is vainly sought, are explained by a single cause. The sudden changes of climate, transgression of the sea, vast volcanic and seismic activities, formation of ice cover, pluvial crises, emergence of mountains and their dislocation, rising and subsidence of coasts, tilting of lakes, sedimentation, fossilization, the provenience of tropical animals and plants in polar regions, conglomerates of fossils of animals of various latitudes and habitats, the extinction of species and genera, the appearance of new species, the reversal of the Earth's magnetic field, and a score of other world-wide phenomena. As important as the world catastrophes conclusion is, it grows in significance for almost every branch of science when, to the ensuing question, of old or of recent tune? The answer is given, of old and of recent. There were global catastrophes in pre-human times, in prehistoric times, and in historical times. We are descendants of survivors, themselves descendants of survivors. We read here a few pages from the logbook of the Earth, a rock rolling in space, circling with its attendant lifeless satellite around a fire, breathing star, moving with this its primary and other evolving planets through the galaxy of the Milky Way of hundreds of millions of burning stars, and together with this entire host, through the void of the universe. More on Immanuel Velikovsky, from Wikipedia. Born, 10 June 1895-dead 17 November 1979. Was a Russian-Jewish independent scholar, best known as the author of a number of controversial books reinterpreting the events of ancient history, in particular the U.S. bestseller Worlds in Collision, published in 1950. Earlier, he played a role in the founding of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem in Israel, and was a psychiatrist and psychoanalyst. His books use comparative mythology and ancient literary sources, including the Old Testament, to argue that Earth suffered catastrophic close contacts with other planets, principally Venus and Mars, in ancient times. In positioning Velikovsky among catastrophists including Hans Bellamy, Ignatius Donnelly, and Johann Gottlieb Radlov, the British astronomers Victor Klüb and Bill Napier noted, Velikovsky is not so much the first of the new catastrophists. He is the last in a line of traditional catastrophists going back to medieval times and probably earlier. Velikovsky argued that electromagnetic effects play an important role in celestial mechanics. He also proposed a revised chronology for ancient Egypt, Greece, Israel, and other cultures of the ancient Near East. The revised chronology aimed at explaining the so-called Dark Age of the Eastern Mediterranean, see 1100 to 750 BC, and reconciling biblical history with mainstream archaeology and Egyptian chronology. In general, Velikovsky's theories have been ignored or vigorously rejected by the academic community. Nonetheless, his books often sold well and gained an enthusiastic support in lay circles, often fueled by claims of unfair treatment for Velikovsky by orthodox academia. The controversy surrounding his work and its reception is often referred to as the Velikovsky Affair. In 1950, after 8 publishing houses rejected the Worlds in Collision manuscript, it was finally published by Macmillan, which had a large presence in the academic textbook market. Even before its appearance, The book was enveloped by furious controversy when Harper's Magazine published a highly positive feature on it, as did Reader's Digest, with what would today be called a creationist slant. This came to the attention of Shapley, who opposed the publication of the work, having been made familiar with Velikovsky's claims through the pamphlet Velikovsky had given him. Shapley threatened to organize a textbooks boycott of Macmillan for its publication of Worlds in Collision, and within 2 months the book was transferred to Doubleday. It was by then a bestseller in the United States. In 1952, Doubleday published the first installment in Velikovsky's revised chronology, Ages in Chaos, followed by The Earth in Upheaval, a geological volume, in 1955. In November 1952, Velikovsky moved from Manhattan to Princeton, New Jersey. For most of the 1950s and early 1960s, Velikovsky was persona non grata on college and university campuses. After this period, he began to receive more requests to speak. He lectured, frequently to record crowds, at universities across North America. In 1972, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation aired a one-hour television special featuring Velikovsky and his work, and this was followed by a 30-minute documentary by the BBC in 1973. During the remainder of the 1970s, Velikovsky devoted a great deal of his time and energy to rebutting his critics in academia, and he continued to tour North America and Europe to deliver lectures on his ideas. By that time, the elderly Velikovsky suffered from diabetes and intermittent depression, which his daughter said may have been exacerbated by the academic establishment's continuing rejection of his work. He died in 1979. Posthumous administration of literary estate. A volume of Velikovsky's discussions and correspondence with Albert Einstein appeared in Hebrew in Israel, translated and edited by his daughter Shulamit Velikovsky-Kogan. In the late 1990s, a large portion of Velikovsky's unpublished book manuscripts, essays and correspondence became available at the Velikovsky Archive website. In 2005, Velikovsky's daughter Ruth Sharon presented his entire archive to Princeton University Library. Ideas. Notwithstanding Velikovsky's dozen or so publications in medical and psychoanalytic journals in the 1920s and 1930s, the work for which he became well known was developed by him during the early 1940s, whilst living in New York. He summarized his core ideas in an affidavit in November 1942, and in two privately published Script Academica pamphlets entitled Theses for the Reconstruction of Ancient History, 1945, and Cosmos Without Gravitation, 1946. Rather than have his ideas dismissed wholesale because of potential flaws in any one area, Velikovsky then chose to publish them as a series of book volumes, aimed at a lay audience, dealing separately with his proposals on ancient history, and with areas more relevant to the physical sciences. Velikovsky was a passionate Zionist, and this did steer the focus of his work, although its scope was considerably more far-reaching than this. The entire body of work could be said to stem from an attempt to solve the following problem: that to Velikovsky there appeared to be insufficient correlation in the written or archaeological records between biblical history and what was known of the history of the area, in particular, Egypt. Velikovsky searched for common mention of events within literary records, and in the Ipuwer papyrus he believed he had found a contemporary Egyptian account of the plagues of Egypt. Moreover, he interpreted both accounts as descriptions of a great natural catastrophe. Velikovsky attempted to investigate the physical cause of these events, and extrapolated backwards and forwards in history from this point, cross-comparing written and mythical records from cultures on every inhabited continent, using them to attempt synchronisms of the historical records, yielding what he believed to be further periodic natural catastrophes that can be global in scale. He arrived at a body of radical interdisciplinary ideas, which might be summarized as: planet Earth had suffered natural catastrophes on a global scale, both before and during humankind's recorded history. There is evidence for these catastrophes in the geological record, Here Velikovsky was advocating catastrophist ideas as opposed to the prevailing uniformitarian notions, an archaeological record. The extinction of many species had occurred catastrophically, not by gradual Darwinian means. The catastrophes that occurred within the memory of humankind are recorded in the myths, legends and written history of all ancient cultures and civilizations. Velikovsky pointed to alleged concordances in the accounts of many cultures, and proposed that they referred to the same real events. For instance, the memory of a flood is recorded in the Hebrew Bible, in the Greek legend of Deucalion, and in the Manu legend of India. Velikovsky put forward the psychoanalytic idea of cultural amnesia as a mechanism whereby these literal records came to be regarded as mere myths and legends. The causes of these natural catastrophes were close encounters between the Earth and other bodies within the solar system, not least what are now the planets Saturn, Jupiter, Venus, and Mars, these bodies having moved upon different orbits within human memory. To explain the fact that these changes to the configuration of the solar system violate several well-understood laws of physics, Velikovsky invented a role for electromagnetic forces in counteracting gravity and orbital mechanics. Some of Velikovsky's specific postulated catastrophes included: citation needed a tentative suggestion that Earth had once been a satellite of a proto-Saturn body, before its current solar orbit; that the deluge, Noah's flood, had been caused by proto-Saturn's entering a nova state, and ejecting much of its mass into space; a suggestion that the planet Mercury was involved in the Tower of Babel catastrophe. Jupiter had been the culprit for the catastrophe that saw the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah; periodic close contacts with a cometary Venus, which had been ejected from Jupiter, had caused the Exodus events, c. 1500 BCE, and Joshua's subsequent sun standing still, Joshua 10:12 and 13, incident. Periodic close contacts with Mars had caused havoc in the 8th and 7th centuries BCE. As noted above, Velikovsky had conceived the broad sweep of this material by the early 1940s. However, within his lifetime, whilst he continued to research, expand and lecture upon the details of his ideas, he released only selected portions of his work to the public in book form: Citation Needed Worlds in Collision, 1950, discussed the literary and mythical records of the Venus and Mars catastrophes. Portions of his revised chronology were published as Ages in Chaos, 1952, Peoples of the Sea, 1977, and Ramesses II and His Time, 1978, the related monograph Oedipus and Akhenaten, 1960, posited the thesis that Pharaoh Akhenaten was the prototype for the Greek mythic figure Oedipus. Earth in Upheaval, 1955, dealt with geological evidence for global natural catastrophes. Velikovsky's ideas on his earlier Saturn/Mercury/Jupiter events were never published, and the available archived manuscripts are much less developed. Of all the strands of his work, Velikovsky published least on his belief that electromagnetism plays a role in orbital mechanics. Although he appears to have retreated from the propositions in his 1946 monograph Cosmos Without Gravitation, no such retreat is apparent in Stargazers and Gravediggers. Cosmos Without Gravitation, which Velikovsky placed in university libraries and sent to scientists, is a probable catalyst for the hostile response of astronomers and physicists to his later claims about astronomy. However, other Velikovskian enthusiasts such as Ralph Jurgens, Earl Milton, Val Thornhill, and Donald E. Scott have claimed that stars are powered not by internal nuclear fusion, but by galactic-scale electrical discharge currents. Such ideas do not find support in the conventional literature and are rejected as pseudoscience by the scientific community. Emigration to the USA and a career as an author. In 1939, with the prospect of war looming, Velikovsky traveled with his family to New York, intending to spend a sabbatical year researching for his book Oedipus and Akhenaten. The book was inspired by Freud's Moses and monotheism and explored the possibility that Pharaoh Akhenaten was the legendary Oedipus. Freud had argued that Akhenaten, the supposedly monotheistic Egyptian pharaoh, was the source of the religious principles that Moses taught to the people of Israel in the desert. Freud's claim, and that of others before him, was based in part on the resemblance of Psalm 104 in the Bible to an Egyptian hymn discovered on the wall of the tomb of Akhenaten's general, I, in Akhenaten's city of Akhetaten. To disprove Freud's claim and to prove the Exodus as such, Velikovsky sought evidence for the Exodus in Egyptian documents. One such document was the Ipuwer papyrus, which he felt reported events similar to several of the biblical plagues. Since conventional Egyptology dated the Ipuwer papyrus much earlier than either the biblical date for the Exodus, ca. 1500-1450 BCE, or the Exodus date accepted by many of those who accepted the conventional chronology of Egypt, ca. 1250 BCE, Velikovsky had to revise the conventional chronology. Within weeks of his arrival in the United States, World War II began. Launching on a tangent from his original book project, Velikovsky began to develop the radical catastrophist cosmology and revised chronology theories for which he would become notorious. For the remainder of the Second World War, now as a permanent resident of New York City, he continued to research and write about his ideas, searching for a means to disseminate them to academia and the public. He privately published two small script academica pamphlets summarizing his theories in 1945, Theses for the Reconstruction of Ancient History and Cosmos Without Gravitation. He mailed copies of the latter to academic libraries and scientists, including Harvard astronomer Hala Shapley in 1947. Supplement Worlds in Collision in the Light of Recent Finds in Archaeology, Geology, and Astronomy. An address before the Graduate College Forum of Princeton University on October 14, 1953. 180 years ago, in 1773, Pierre-Simon de Laplace, 1749-1827, then 23 years old, stood before the Académie des Sciences in Paris and read a paper in which he proved the stability of the solar system. All deflections of the planets from their paths are only periodic oscillations from their mean courses, and the celestial mechanism is wound up to go on forever. Laplace's contemporary, Jean-Baptiste Lamarck, 1744-1829, set out to demonstrate in a series of works that this Earth has ever been an abode of peaceful evolution, free from spasmodic disturbances, in opposition to the dominant views of his day. These ideas of harmony or stability in the celestial and terrestrial spheres gained ground in the 19th century and became the foundation of scientific thought. In 1846, Leverrier, by announcing the existence of the planet Neptune, which was immediately thereafter discovered in the part of the sky indicated by him, proved the gravitational theory of Newton and the orderly universe of Laplace to be correct. However, in the same year, by detecting the anomaly in the revolution of Mercury, always accumulating in one and the same direction, he threw the first doubt on the infallibility of these very laws. The theory of uniformity, as understood by Lamarck and Hutton and developed by Lyell, became the cornerstone of the Darwinian theory, and Darwin went so far as to say that anybody who was unconvinced by Lyell's teaching should refrain from reading The Origin of Species. The principle of uniformity, or the explanation of all past events in the history of the globe in terms of the processes in action in our own age, or the denial of catastrophic crises in the past, gave Darwin what he needed most for his idea of the origin of species: almost unlimited time. In order that from the struggle for existence, or competition, new forms should evolve, and that an animal like the spider with its many legs and human beings should have had a common ancestor, untold eons were necessary. By the end of the 19th century, the war between the theory of evolution and the theory of creation in 6 days, less than 6,000 years ago, was concluded, with victory to the theory of evolution. The only difficulty left was, in the view of Thomas Huxley, that no really new species had appeared on the world scene since the scientific observations were made, not even in breeding experiments. the geological record, however, spoke unequivocally of the fact, in the past lived animal forms that do not live any longer, and of the forms that five in our age, many were not present in the geological past. Laplace's theory of the origin of the solar system from a rotating nebula was replaced, by the end of the century, with a theory of a catastrophic beginning in a near collision of the Sun with another star, with debris forming the planets. But it was stressed by the authors of this new theory that the universe is orderly, and this beginning in a cataclysm was an unusually rare occurrence in the cosmos, and that the solar system is governed by the principle of stability, as enunciated by Laplace, and the Earth by the law of uniformity, and the animals and plants by the law of evolution through continuity. It appeared that, basic principles having been established, science had before it only the work of refinement in observation and in the addition of details for the perfection of knowledge, but the time of basic discoveries was over. This was the outlook in 1895. In April of that year, Fridtjof Nansen, in an attempt to discover the North Pole, reached a point less than 4 degrees from it. The scientific world looked upon the discovery of the North Pole as the most coveted goal still left to be attained by science. But before Nansen, drifting from latitude 86, reached his home in Norway, the scene changed. Comrade Röntgen of Würzburg discovered the X-rays or cathode rays that pass through opaque bodies. In the same year of 1895-20 year, old Marconi, working at the home of his father near Bologna, made the first successful experiment with wireless transmission. That year, too, Sigmund Freud published his first paper, together with Joseph Breuer, which led to a new understanding of the realm known as the subconscious, and at the same time Pavlov made his contribution to the psychology of the reflexes. The next year, and still before Nansen had landed on the Norwegian coast, Henri Becquerel, working on uranium, discovered the phenomenon of radioactivity. 2 years later he was followed by the Curies, who discovered radium. In 1897 J. J. Thomson announced that the atom is divisible and is actually a microcosm, and he was followed by Rutherford. In 1900 Planck presented the theory of quanta, or energies dispatched in bundles or shots, and not in a continuous stream. And in the field of the origin of species, in 1900, Van Verijs announced mutations in plants, observed for the first time, a process of spontaneous changes in living nature fundamentally different from the process of evolution through continuity as postulated by Darwin. Thus in a few years, in a spectacular series of discoveries, the entire world, matter and energy and living species and the human soul, opened new horizons and everything appeared to be in incessant vibration, collisions, and transformation. The macrocosm, the microcosm, and even the subtle world of the mind, all alike. And in 1905 Albert Einstein, then 26 years old, offered his understanding of the physical world, an understanding that required a new mental approach, as a testimonial that the age of basic discoveries had not ended with the victory of Darwin over the Book of Genesis. Since then another 50 years have passed. Once more, as before the end of the 19th century, we are told that the fundamentals are all known, the age of basic discoveries is definitely terminated, this time for certain, and present and future generations will have to satisfy themselves with detecting details, accumulating data, and adding decimals. And though the exciting decade of 1895-1905 threw light on processes in matter, life, and soul, processes that are certainly not inert and are marked by spontaneity and conflict, science in its various branches adjusted the new discoveries and ideas to the framework of the old great principle reigning equally in lifeless and living nature, the law of harmony and unperturbed stability. The time was ripe for heresy. In 1950, a book, Worlds in Collision, created an outburst of emotions almost unprecedented in science. In the preface to the book I wrote, harmony or stability in the celestial and terrestrial spheres is the point of departure of the present-day concept of the world as expressed in the celestial mechanics of Newton and the theory of evolution of Darwin. If these two men of science are sacrosanct, This book is a heresy. I came upon the idea that traditions and legends and memories of generic origin can be treated in the same way in which we treat in psychoanalysis the early memories of a single individual. I spent 10 years on this work. I found that the collective memory of humankind spoke of a series of global catastrophes that occurred in historical times. I believed that I could even identify the exact tunes and the very agents of the great upheavals of the more recent past. The conclusions at which I arrived compelled me to cross the frontiers into various fields of science, archaeology, geology, and astronomy. The result was a book, a prolegomenon. In its concluding pages, I conceded that more problems were raised than had been solved, and I promised, always reckoning with the limitations of the individual scholar, to pursue my study into these fields too. But already the implications of the fact of great global catastrophes on the Earth, one of the celestial bodies, in a time so recent, had caused my critics to assert, in the words of a Harvard astronomer, that here was the most amazing example of a shattering of accepted concepts on record. In the heat of the debate in the press, the book was pronounced one of the most significant books written since the invention of printing, and also the worst book since the invention of movable characters. Believing that an emotional atmosphere is not well suited to fruitful debate, I have entered only infrequently into the controversy. I have made short factual corrections of statements by the Royal Astronomer and by J. B. S. Haldane appearing in their reviews of my book, and I participated in a debate with your Professor of Astronomy, J. Q. Stewart, in the pages of Harper's Magazine, June 1951. I appeared before the American Philosophical Society, which at its annual meeting in April 1952 held a symposium on some unorthodoxies of modern science, my unorthodoxy being the chief subject on the agenda. Otherwise, I have kept myself out of the verbal conflict. Now more than 3.5 years have passed since the publication of the book, and I appreciate the opportunity offered me by your invitation to present a dispassionate review of recent finds in the three fields named in the title of my address: Worlds in Collision and Recent Finds in Archaeology. In my book, I describe the great natural catastrophes of the second and first millennia before the present era. Prominent place is given to the description of the natural upheaval that occurred in the closing hours of the Middle Kingdom in Egypt. I synchronize this event with the Exodus, when sea, land, and sky were in uproar. The collective human memory retained an inexhaustible array of recollections of the time when the world was in conflagration, when sea engulfed land, earth trembled, celestial bodies were disturbed in their motion, and meteorites fell. My narrative is based on historical texts of many peoples around the globe, on classical literature, on epics of northern races, on sacred books of the Orient and Occident, on traditions and folklore of primitive peoples. The question that arose was, where is the archaeological evidence? In later chapters of my book, I gave such evidence: water clocks and sundials that show a different length of the day or altered latitudes, change in the orientation of ancient temples which originally faced toward the east but do so no longer. I also closely examined in my book the calendars of the civilized peoples of antiquity, from Mexico and Peru to Greece, Iran, Israel, Egypt, Babylon, Assyria, India, and China, and the calendar reforms that were made. All this material gave strong support to the literary evidence, working independently of me. Professor Claude Schaeffer, whose earlier excavations at Ras Shamra, Ugarit, caused a complete revolution in biblical exegesis, published a volume printed by the Oxford University Press. In this very detailed and technical work, comprising, together with tables, almost 1,000 pages, Schaeffer demonstrates that on several occasions, each marking the end of an epoch, the entire ancient East was shaken and devastated. Modern annals of seismology know nothing comparable in severity and extent. The most devastating of these upheavals took place at exactly the end of the Middle Kingdom in Egypt, causing its downfall, as claimed in Worlds in Collision and Ages in Chaos. Cities were overturned, epidemics left the dead piled in common graves, the pursuit of arts and commerce came to an abrupt end, empires ceased to exist, strata of earth, dust, and ashes yards thick covered the ruined cities. In many places the population was annihilated, in others it was decimated. Settled living was replaced by a nomadic existence. Climate changed,